Hello and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week's episode is termed All Clear. Everything goals behind score reviews and anything to do with those people who stand between the big sticks. You can contact us at our Facebook page, One Game at a Time, or our Twitter handle at Origins of Footy. It's a good evening to Ryan Miller.
Good evening. How are we, Liam? You going well?
Oh, super duper. And Finn, you?
Pumped. Absolutely pumped about tonight, gentlemen.
And we're pumped right up because we're joined really by goal umpiring royalty, aren't we?
He's another special guest.
Sam Walsh. He's hot off the press, really, in terms of being a goal umpire in the AFL. He started off in the Eastern Football League with 240 games as a junior field umpire and then a senior goal umpire. And his big career highlights to date are the 2017 VFL Grand Final and representing the VFL in a state game twice. It's a very good evening to Sam Walsh. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. Great to be here. It is a pleasure of mine to be in your company, that's for sure.
Nice job, a guest in who's listened to some of the episodes prior to turning up.
I'm going to get straight to the question I want to know. Are goal umpires the weird ones of the three different kinds of umpires on the field?
Well, I actually get this question a fair bit. I almost say it's a good question. I know there's a bit of a point system happening there. But I would say this, that one of the things that you would find, in particularly down a community level, is that in a goal umpiring group, you tend to get just about every different type of person.
Shape and size.
You're not wrong. Yeah. You're not wrong. We all have a great passion for the game, and that's why we're there. You'd find some pretty big differing, I'd say, ways of going about things. But, we're all there because we have passion for the game, and I suppose that's the main thing, isn't it?
Yes. Comments from over the fence. Surely they must get bandied about a fair bit, particularly if you're standing in front of cheer squads. What are some of the best that you've heard?
I do remember this day quite vividly. It was my first Division 1 game at the Eastern Footy League. It was Wantirna South versus Croydon and at a place called Walker Reserve. The thing about Walker Reserve is it has very small goalposts. And
little sticks.
And anyone... Anyone out there listening to this podcast, if any of them have goal umpired before, they would know that our arch nemesis is small goalposts. Small goalposts. And I remember the full forward for Wantirna South took a mark right near the behind post. It was on my right-hand side, my right-hand behind post. And he's kicked a snap and it's gone bloody high. And I've backpedaled a little bit. I've gone under the post. I've looked up. And I swear it would have hit it. And I've tapped my chest. And for those that have been to Walker Reserve, they would know that the social club are right behind the goals. And I'm telling you now, I was told very directly by quite a few people over the fence that day not to return to this end for the last quarter. The siren went for three-quarter time, about 10 seconds after this decision. I was told very directly, please don't come back to this end. We would like the other guy to come down here. If you come down here, you might not get out of the car park. And that was actually, and funnily enough, that was actually when I was 16 years old. So it just shows that the community fans and supporters, they show no mercy when it comes to the goal umpires. They'll certainly give it out. But you know what? That's part of the atmosphere at local footy.
And now it's time for mailbag.
All right, so mailbag this week is slightly different to the way we've done it in previous weeks. You know, we like to go to Facebook and Twitter, but given how exciting the season's been of late, and there's so many sides involved. We talked about this in one of our episodes about how well the AFL have done of making things as even as possible over the last probably decade. This week I went with Finney to the football. We went to a game, and Finney and I went to watch the Bombers Cats, which we didn't think would be all that even, if I'm honest. Finney was a bit down about the whole thing, and well, look what happened, Finney. Everything was lovely in the end. But there was a gentleman there called Gareth, who was from Fitzroy North, who asked us a question about the flag waving. Goals kicked, why the way flags was the question. And it just so happens that Sam was joining us. So, Sam, I'm putting you on the spot. Why do you wave flags? What's going on?
Well, we wave flags for a very, very important reason, and that is to confirm the scores. So if I signal a goal with my fingers, that actually is not a score. That's just a signal to say that a score has occurred, but to confirm the score, you have to wave the two flags. So, I mean, let's say in a local game of football, in particularly perhaps in a division where you might have maybe some inexperienced goal umpires, there might be a ball that maybe clips a post and the field umpires close in might not see it. They give the all clear. Goal umpire might signal. But if, let's say, the mid-zone field umpire, they might be standing with a really good line of the ball. They might see the deflection. They can blow the whistle and come in. And if you actually haven't waved the flags, then you don't actually have to do the annulment, which is when you cross the flags together. So, if you wave the flags, that is confirming a score has occurred, and that's when you mark the score down in your scorecard.
That's brilliant, Sam. I actually didn't know that. The score wasn't officially confirmed until the flags were waved. The interesting thing, a couple of things on this when we started having a look at it, and Finn and I did a bit of research about, I suppose, the history of the flag waving stuff. But just the AFL Community Club website, which sort of indicates to local volunteers, if you're going to be the goal umpire for a day, this is what you're supposed to do. If you go to the scoring and flag waving section of the AFL Community website, it is enormous. Like, nobody in their right mind is going to go, oh, they've asked me to do goal umpiring on the weekend, so I now have to read this 18-page document to make sure that I'm really fully aware of what's going on. Now, interestingly, there's three bullet points on flag waving alone. And the technique required to, you know, wave the flags correctly. The first movement is for the goal umpire to raise their flag or flags, nice, above their head at a position akin to 11 and 1 on a clock face. Akin, yeah.
Riding for the local man.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. Yeah. The flag movement will be executed above the head and there shouldn't be any embellishment.
That's
word for word.
To be reading
this is word for word out of the AFL Community Club section. The waving, I'll keep going, Liam.
Thank you.
The flag waving process for a goal requires the flag to be brought from a starting position across once, back once, and down to the sides. For a behind, only one flag is required from starting position across, back, and down. Sam is currently miming that for us, which is lovely from my perspective. But we went back and then we started looking at, well, where did this come from? Finn and I had a bit of a, well, debate. We're not sure because there's some grey area around this. Yes. Finn, what did you find?
I got 1866, where the goal umpires began waving flags. But from what Sam has just told us, I mean, what happened the previous 20... you know, 5 or so years before that and confirming a goal. Which, obviously, at the time, they were appointed by the clubs and they're usually ex-players or even injured players at the time. So suffice to say they had, you know, the best interest of their, you know, the game, probably their own team. But you've looked into Tasmania.
Well, I went through, there was a couple of blogs that had some points about, and we can't really find anything specific about whether or not this is true, but it's said that the Tasmanian football comp in 1884, so 2 years before, were the first to introduce a flag waving system to signal down to the other end of the ground, because it's likely that goal umpires were keeping score as well. So that's 1884. But this is the other interesting one. So in 1884 in Tasmania, let's say they did have flags in use. And then in 1886, introduced in Victoria, they said that the first game I think we found were Essendon against South Adelaide at the MCG, which was, like a...
end-of-season game.
End-of-season game, thank you, yeah. But there was no system of waving flags to signify goals until 1887. So basically we reckon that it was like 3 years of just people improving and just going around doing whatever sort of flag waving they want to. It was like Crazy Dave from Tassie who would go on like a 2 minute flag waving. Guy's trying to kick the ball back in, can't because Dave's still waving his flags.
Like a flag waving enthusiast sort of brought it in and made it commonplace.
And then they had to introduce, no, there's a system to waving the flags, which Sam has demonstrated for us so beautifully this evening. Mm. Yeah, so... I think that answers the question quite nicely.
Are you listening, Gareth?
Yeah.
So you mentioned before the umpire who's in your ear, Sam. So that's to do with the score review. Does he or she chat to you at any stage?
Basically allows us to communicate with basically everyone else on the ground. So...
boundary umpires include?
No, not the boundaries. So the boundaries are the only ones that don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
So in my ear, I hear the three field umpires, the emergency field umpire on the bench, and the other goal umpire if we choose to speak on the microphone. So basically, I could say whatever I like and no one would hear me, but there's a little button that I push on my hip if I actually need to speak to be heard by the other umpires. So if I have a score review, that's where you'll generally see the goal umpire. It looks like he's going to push a button or something. That's actually us just making sure that when we talk to the field umpire, the score reviewer can actually hear what we're saying. So the score reviewer who's sitting up in the stand, they have probably a speaker system up there, and they can hear, obviously, the field umpire talking all the time. But when a score review occurs, they have to be able to hear us say, say what the preliminary score is and then what we're actually asking for them to check. So, but I actually have a question for you three.
Oh, my gosh.
Shit.
This has not happened.
I don't know. I don't know if this has ever happened on the podcast before, but I've actually got a question for you three. My question to you guys is, have you ever seen two scores in a row without the flags being waved?
Maybe there was a score and then it was decided that it had hit a behind post or something and therefore it was a throw-in?
Okay, let me...
I'm
going to give you a hint. I'm going to give you a hint.
I've been this excited today.
There was a rule...
No, I was going to say it turned over straight away, like as soon as it came back straight back in, but...
You're onto it now. The goal umpire had to chase the ball out fairly wide, right? Tapped his chest, signalled the behind. Now, as soon as he signalled, the player kicked in, but went straight to the man on the mark.
Yeah.
Right? Who's put the ball through straight away.
Yeah.
Right?
He's still doing this.
And so...
He's had to borrow flags from the cheer squad behind.
This is something that happens very rarely. But believe it or not, we actually do practice this.
Is that right?
We do practice these sort of scenarios in training, right? Because you need to know what to do in this situation. Because if you have not waved the flags, the score has not occurred. The score has not been recorded. So no score has been recorded for that first behind. So the goal umpire had to go out to the field umpire and say, listen, I actually haven't waved the flag for the first behind, so I'm going to have to wave the flag for that first, and then I need the all clear for the second one.
On the weekend, you had a treacherous entrance. You caught one right in the hooter.
I'll be honest, it wasn't my finest performance on the weekend, unfortunately. But I had Jack Nunes was shooting for goal, and actually in the second quarter, he had a shot from about 50 out, and it went through like half post high, near side for a behind, and. And he was lining up. He would only be kicking from about 45. And I thought to myself, he'll make the distance here pretty easy. And there's a couple of players around me, but I thought, he'll make it. Yeah, he'll make the distance. And the ball's left the boot. It's gone fairly high. And I thought, Yep, that's coming through, and I'm sort of working my way over to my right because it's going towards the post. And I've parked myself under the flight of the ball, and I'm telling you now, I'm still having visions of this, man. I've parked myself under the flight of the ball, and about 4/5 of the way through, I see it coming down.
It's got 4/5.
I'm telling you, I see this ball coming down, and I'm going, shit, I'm in the wrong spot here. And all of a sudden, the players have swapped me, they've all, and there's nowhere to go. Lyndon Dunn missed it, but Scharenberg got a little finger on it. But when his arm came down, he smacked me right in the top of the nose. And I knew at the time, like I knew it was well over the line. It's probably about a metre over. Mm. But I had to go for the review because I was 99% sure it was a goal, but because I was in such a bad position to judge it, I felt like we just had to look at it. The second one, probably before you even asked me about the second one, I can just tell you straight away.
Both in the same
game. Sorry, Sam. Same
game.
This is a stitch up.
Same game. Same game. Same quarter. Same quarter.
And Gonzo Walsh.
Same quarter. Savage receives a handball. About 55 out, and you just knew he was shooting for goal. And he kicks this ball, and it's high. It's high, well over post height at its peak. And again, I've sort of moved over to the under-flight position, and then this time, not quite 4/5, but I reckon about 3/4 this time, I've decided, nah, this is going to be short as well. But this time, I had room to get around and get online. Because there was no one around me. The only player coming in was Chris Main for Collingwood, and I knew he was going to have a crack at it. I could tell just in my peripheral vision, I could tell he was going to have a crack at it. So I got round, and I was probably just a fraction late to being sort of online and set. So ideally, goal umpires, if there's a contest on the line, you want to be astride the line and set with your head still, head on the line, looking at the back of the post, because that is that's the point of reference, the back of the post. And so I was bloody close, but I wasn't quite exactly on the line when Main touched the ball. And I knew it was really close, like it was so close. And straight away I pushed the button. I looked at the field umpire's come in. And from my view, because I was on that slight angle, there was no daylight between the ball and the back of the post when he touched it. So I had to go behind, even though in my head I knew that obviously if my head was a little bit further around to the line, I probably would have had that angle to see it absolutely perfectly. So I went up with my preliminary score as a behind. And then obviously during the review process was having a bit of a look at the scoreboard and it was over by, you know, probably about an inch or two. Mm. And I suppose that's what the system is there for. But every AFL goal umpire will tell you that we want to get every decision right. And so therefore, when it is overturned like that, you know, I was disappointed.
Well, look, for me, that takes me back to 1876. I don't know about you, gentlemen. because apparently one in every four matches was marred by a scoring dispute. And one of my favourite ones was at Royal Park. Carlton defeated East Melbourne by 2-0. And the goal umpire negated the third because he said the goalpost was leaning at such an angle it allowed the ball to go through. Now, I'm loving this. That's fantastic. Even though, so Sam's gone, he's just had a very stressful week.
Yeah.
And this bloke apparently just decided to go, oh, you know what, it's a bit too much late. You're not having that.
So the umpire judged the bend of the post to be
too
severe.
Much. Yeah,
it went through those sticks.
And worked out that had it have been straight, the ball would have hit it.
Yes.
Yeah,
he was on it. In perfect position. Yeah. He was in perfect position.
He's a physicist umpire.
but it does want to bring you back to one of the points that you made earlier, Sammy, about the public behind you. I wanted to ask you a few questions about the relationship with, well, the public and administrative bodies.
Okay.
That we have. But I did want to just give a bit of a brief overview for our listeners. In 1898, I actually didn't even think of this, they were banned from playing footy. safety part of it, 1909, there was a massive riot. A bloke called Richard Bain, his life was threatened constantly and it never went back to it. 1914, assault on a bloke called Les White. This led to the VFL UA to lead the issue for protection to umpires. And then in 1920, the umpires threatened to strike if protection wasn't improved. And at this point, they refused to send their umpires to Bendigo and Manila. We could go on and on with all this, but what's been your experience with safety and abuse? And what I want to know is, do you receive any particular training from the AFL for that?
We do, actually. So, look, first things first, abuse from the crowd. I mean, the thing is that, people go to the footy because they love the footy. Look, the thing is that as professionals, I think it's just expected that you get on with the job. We're there to umpire the game. I think it's just, you just sort of get on with the job. Like, there's security, like, for example, there's always a security guard behind the goals. So you probably don't really see them. They sit on a really low chair. They actually sit next to the ball boy. So if ever there's any issues, if I feel like, there's a problem here, or if I feel like my safety's under threat, I can just look straight to the security guard and say, hey, can you sort that out or whatever? And, within no time, they could get on their radio and all of a sudden there's 15, out of the blue. Personally, I don't feel under any sort of, like, when I walk to the end, I don't really sort of engage with the crowd at all. Sometimes I give a bit of a smile or whatever. If someone says "g'day, umpy," I might give them a thumbs up or whatever. I don't really see it sort of too much as I'm sure. Look, years and years ago, it obviously would have been totally different. Mm. When the crowd could just jump on the field straight after the siren.
Yeah, in lots of those games, that the kick after the siren matters, and people are everywhere.
Yeah, and I've seen
and
a couple
of them. Like Robert Scott finishes off a game for Geelong, having a shot for goal. And the poor bloke, there is no way that he could have worked that out. He's got to hope that it goes straight through the middle.
Yeah.
If it was a close one like you were talking about before, disaster.
Oh, yeah. I saw one at... it was the Dogs versus the Bears in the 80s, and there was a shot after the siren with so many people on the ground. And you see a player grabbing a spectator and throwing him over the boundary line.
Simon Beasley's having a shot for goal. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
To win the game for Footscray. No doubt the crowd getting in his way, and it's going to make it tough. It's going to make it tough for the goal umpire.
How can he make a decision?
Well, he's got it. Here's the kick. Four premiership points are riding on it. I think he's missed it. One point. The Bears have done it.
One of my favourites is the night grand final 1980, when Malcolm Blight takes the mark, and the siren went... Malcolm Blight kicked it. Kerry Good took the mark. And the siren went when Malcolm Blight had the ball in the centre. And the crowd was that loud, they couldn't hear the siren.
Yeah.
So the siren's gone, kicked it, and, Good's taken the mark.
There's Good with the mark. Good's got the mark. He's well within kicking distance.
The siren's gone, Lou. The umpires haven't been able to hear it, but
The siren's gone. The crowd coming onto the ground now. Good kicks this goal. They've won the match. Oh, what a climax of this 1980 Escort Cup Grand Final. Good's already kicked three goals. He's only about 25 to 30 metres out, dead in front. He kicks this, they've won the game. He's put it through and North Melbourne have premiers. North Melbourne have won the match.
And all of a sudden the crowd have jumped on. There's people running towards Kerry Good, abusing him, trying to put him off. And he's running, trying to kick it before they get to him. and he puts it through for a goal. The goal umpire's got about 100 people in the goal square. Can you imagine if it dropped short?
Yeah.
Imagine if there was a contest on the line. There'd be about 100 people going up for it.
That's an electrifying 80s special.
I love that. I had that on VHS.
Yes.
Absolute beauty.
It's so much better than this.
Sensational
70s. I've got to ask one more question, and that is, you guys fill out the card after each flag wave with a real serious posture, you might say. At each the end of each quarter, you go in to confer with your opposite number, mm-hmm. so to speak, and you just confirm that those scores are accurate?
Yes. So we are the official scorers of the game, so we just confirm that the scores are correct. And then in an AFL game, the emergency goal umpire will join us as well, so we look to them just to get an all clear from them as well.
Yep.
So the emergency goal umpire's role is actually very, very important, because they keep the score on the bench.
Yep.
And if ever there's an issue with the scoreboard, which has actually happened twice while I've been emergency goal umpire this year, the scoreboard's been wrong.
Right.
And once at the G and once at Geelong.
Is that right?
And we have a match day coach up in the box that watches just the goal umpires. So we get, I'm probably going down a bit of a different path here, but like the match day coach's role is to give us feedback on our performance. Mm. But they also score the game as well. Yeah. So what happens is if there's an error with the score, we turn to the match day manager who's sitting on the bench behind us and we say, there's a problem with the scoreboard. You need to expect a call from the match day coach, and the match day coach will call the match day manager. Mm-hmm. The manager will then say, Sam, do you have this score? And I'll say yes, and they go, okay, we're going to change it.
Mm.
So there's a lot of people there keeping the score, but you'd be amazed. Sometimes the goal umpires can have the incorrect score. You know, sometimes you might have 4 points in a row. Yeah, you might have four behinds in a row where the ball might get kicked out to about 60 out and it comes back again. You just haven't got time to get the card out and actually mark it down.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, because it's a very, very dangerous thing to do if while the ball's in the forward 50, for you to get the card out and all of a sudden the ball's coming back through for a score. You know, like you have to, I mean, generally, all of us are different. I tend to wait until it's about a kick and a half from goal. So, or unless I think there's sort of a pattern of play occurring where there's really not going to be a score. So if the defenders, if they do a switch and someone's out and there's no player sort of putting pressure on them, I'll already get my scorecard out before probably he's even marked the ball, because I'm expecting him to mark it and then run off down the flank. So, I've got one more question for you guys on this issue.
We were rubbish last start. Gentlemen.
Right. Why do you think the goal umpire would hold the scorecard at eye level?
Because if something happens in the vision just above or below, the goal umpire will be able to put it down and see exactly what happened in play.
You're correct.
Oh!
So basically, it's there for if something happens, in particularly a reportable incident. Now, this is very, very important for example, community football.
Yeah, okay.
Where there's normally no cameras at the ground. Let's say you might only have two field umpires out on the ground. Two field umpire system is very common at community level. Which means if the ball is, you know, perhaps going down one end, the closest field umpire might be 75 metres away. So if the full forward and the full back get into a biffo and someone gets their head knocked off, if you're writing a score down, you still might see that.
I think in terms of messing up the score, you can see how that happens. Like seven ball overs still happen in cricket and things like that. But we're going to have to call stumps on this evening because it's been a beautiful experience to have Mr. Sam Walsh with us, four-game junior star recruit, so the AFL umpiring group of, well, strange and weird mix of goal umpires, as was stated. It's thank you very much to Finn.
Thank you, Liam. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you to Ryan.
Thank you, guys. Brilliant.
And thank you, Mr. Walsh.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
And we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, so we'll just take it one game at a time.